Welcome to All Africa's Silencing of the Gun series, where we focus on peace building on the continent. I am Mantsadi Sepeka from All Africa, and today our focus is Cameroon. The West African country has an escalating humanitarian crisis and is plagued by two violent conflicts, the main one being between government and separatists from the English-speaking minority. Thousands of people have been killed and hundreds of thousands have been displaced. The country is also being terrorized by extremist group Boko Haram. On our panel today, we have experts from the Positive Peace Group and West Africa Center for Peace. Both organizations are on a mission to build lasting peace in the work that they do. From the Positive Peace Group, we'd like to welcome Gender and Communications Officer Divine Mbuto and Derek Funeba, a political affairs officer specializing in peace and development, as well as conflict management. From the West Africa Center for Peace, we welcome Erasmus Megekra Nindomole, international civil servant, advocate of the High Court of Kenya, social worker and child protection advisor, and founding member of the West Africa Center for Peace Studies in Ghana. We also welcome Godwin Kaodan, who is currently the Deputy Programs Manager at the West Africa Center for Peace Studies in Ghana, and is also hugely experienced in political issues across the continent. And finally, Alberta Holu, experienced social worker and child counselor with competence in evaluations, relationship building, and critical thinking and empathy. Welcome, everyone, and it's a pleasure to have you all take part in the All Africa Silencing of the Guns podcast series on peace building. But before we discuss all the amazing work that you do as peace builders, I would like to invite my colleague Michael Tanto to provide a bit of history as to why the Cameroon finds itself in the position it does today. Michael has not only done extensive work on the development in Cameroon, but is from the West African country himself. Welcome, Michael, and the floor is yours.
Hello, Mantsadi. Can you hear me?
Yes, now I can hear you. You can go
ahead. Thanks for giving me the platform. And good day to everyone. You see, Cameroon, understanding the history of Cameroon can be very complex. Cameroon is a bilingual country that got its independence. So they were colonized by the English on the one hand and the French on the other hand. So this is what happened. After the defeat of the Germans in the Second World War, their territories in Africa were partitioned, as we all know. Now, Cameroon was partitioned into two, and one part of it was attached to Nigeria. The other part was being administered by the French. And as you might know, Nigeria was on a British territory. So consequently, the part that speaks English attached to Nigeria was being controlled by the British. So they speak predominantly English. The majority that was colonized by the French, they speak French. So when they came together in 1972, they had a constitution. To keep the boat system of governance aside, I should say, if you've studied African history and colonization altogether, you should know that the British had the indirect rule. The indirect rule meaning that they don't govern from London or from Westminster, as was the case with the French. The French governed from Paris. So the indirect rule meant that the people had to choose who governs them. The people chosen and elected are answerable to the masses. But with the French system, it was a highly centralized system. Everything controlled from Paris. So that's the two system that we had. So when they came together in 1972, the English didn't want the French system, though they had the majority. So the English people thought that going under a centralized system, they will be dominated by the French. So what they proposed and what they did, they asked for a federal system of government. That is what was given. And those were the conditions under which they came to that union in 1972. But then, 11 years down the line, the then president, Ahidjo, decided to break the federation and created a central system of governance. This did not go down well with some Anglophones. So I will call the Anglophones are actually those who speak English. They're from the Northwest and the Southwest. It did not go down well with them. So since then, they had already had some agitation, and some people were already advocating for a separation. Remember, there were two countries that came together. So they were saying, we the Anglophones had our independence on the 1st of October. So which means we are an independent state. We have the right to form our own state. The Francophones were saying, no, you have to stay. We together now. A single state. We should be a unitary state. I think that's when it all started. But then fast forward now. 2016. I won't go into detail with all everything that the political issues that happened all through till then. There's always been this agitation. Remember, I said the separatists always existed. Now, in 2016, the students in the Boya University, came out on a demonstration. And then what happened was the military used brute force on them. And they were molested and raped and beaten and stuff like that. And then not too long from then, the lawyers and the teachers also came out protesting. They wanted their grievances to be looked into, but the lawyers came under a consortium. Now this consortium of lawyers were led by a guy called Agbobala. Agbobala is a lawyer and was the head of consortium. So instead of the government listening to them, they actually took their grievances to the minister of Justice, Laurent Esso. But instead of listening to them, Laurent Esso picked them up and threw them in jail because they believed that the reason we're having too many, the country is having too many problems is because of the federal system was abolished. They advocated that we go back to the federal system of governance. Now, the government threw them in jail, and that's when the whole thing started. Now, the population was not happy about that. And then the population came out on the 1st of October 2016 to assert, remind the government that they had their independence on this date. So they are a people. They have the right to choose how they want to be governed. The government responded by sending armed men, beat them up, kicked down their doors. There were reports of rape, molestation, and a whole lot of people were arrested. So it started, this is how it actually started. And then now the separatists started pushing their agenda. They said, we already want that we can't stay with this kind of people. We can't stay with this kind of government. We should go form our own state where we can govern ourselves, where we will be respected, where the governors, the people will be listened to. That's how they started. And then remember, you have the Federalists on the one hand and the Separatists on the other. Most of the Federalists now were led by the Separatists. Now, instead, the Separatists were the minority. But when it started after 2016, they became the majority. And now they started encouraging everybody to defend themselves. That's how it started. It started as a self-defense thing. They said the military men cannot come into your house, kick your door down, molest your sisters, kill your brothers, rape your sisters, and then you let them go. You should be able to defend yourself. You have to go down fighting. So they started with the normal machete and stuff like that. And then instead of the government listening and actually trying to talk, the government increased the amount of brutality, the force and everything. Now, these guys started forming their own little groups, their own little armed groups. And in this process, they were actually being supported by the army, by the diaspora. The diaspora actually contributed money, a lot of money, and sent it to them to arm themselves. That's how it all started. It started from there, and then In 2019, after pressure from the international community, the government thought, okay, they will try to organize a dialogue. But then the Cameroonians in general this time realized that the dialogue was actually a fake. They are not prepared to change. So the conflict continued. And up to now, they've moved from little machetes to then guns. Now we see sophisticated arms like explosives and stuff like that. So that's how we've got to this point. It's 5 years now and running. And right now, nobody knows where the conflict is going, and nobody knows how it's going to end. Now, those that were separatists before, the moderates, they don't even get listened to now. These people carrying guns are saying that a lot of people have died, a lot have been sacrificed. So they didn't go and sacrifice themselves because they want a federation. Now they want a complete independence, and the government is now sitting with this problem, not sure how to go about it.
With the different, what I understand what you're saying, the different factions or the different army groups, that doesn't help the situation when groups like Boko Haram come in, because then it creates a big mess. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, you see, the biggest problem is Boko Haram is operating in the north, in the north of the country. Actually, they three different, you have the English speaking, which is the southwest and the northwest, where the Anglophones are agitating. Then you have the north of the country and the far north, where you have Boko Haram that are coming, and the Lake Chad Basin all together. You have Boko Haram that's coming up from that way, from Nigeria and Chad. So attacking Nigeria and Chad. Then in the east of the country, you do have Central African Republic rebels that are coming through to the country and causing havoc. So the country right now is just arms all over the place. So it's so, so difficult to pinpoint one particular conflict. The Anglophone conflict is just one conflict. The Boko Haram conflict in the north is got displaced people, and many have died, and the terrorism. That's one regard the government is also battling with. Then you got the Central African Republic rebels that are infiltrating in the east. So the country has been attacked south, north, south, east, west. You know, it's a complicated situation.
Yeah, it sounds extremely complicated. Thank you so much, Michael, for that insight. Welcome to All Africa Silencing of the Guns series. We focus on peace building on the continent. I am Mansadi Sepeka from All Africa. And today, as Michael said, we are focusing on Cameroon. Our panel of experts today, we have experts from the Positive Peace Group and West Africa Center for Peace. Both organizations are on a mission to build lasting peace in the work they do. Welcome, everyone. It's such a pleasure to have you all take part in this All Africa Silencing of the Guns podcast series on peace building. So let's get started with Erasmus, if we will. As the founding member of the West Africa Center for Peace in Ghana, tell us a bit more about your organization, firstly, and what it does to build peace in a region riddled by civil wars, specifically Cameroon.
Beautiful. West Africa Center for Peace Studies is an independent, nonpartisan, and nonprofit research, advocacy-based, and policy-focused organization located in Accra. The center provides research, training, and advocacy support in aim to enhance human development. So our aim to see Africa as a whole in peace. West Africa Center for Peace Studies, we are working with partners across African continent, or we are the founding members, foundation and research institutions for promotion of culture of peace in Africa, which has extensive membership across the continent and beyond. So we try as much as we can to do some trainings, research on peace and conflict resolution, human rights, development issues, and what have you. We have a partnership with a Positive Peace Group that we entered into an agreement to work closely on a training package and an advocacy program across the continent. Now, focusing on Cameroon, we will be more proactive with them in doing most of those advocacy issues, as well as training youth and peace workers across Cameroon. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Erasmus. Godwin, if I can turn to you, if you can hear me there, what do you believe is the role of NGOs in the work of peace building?
Thank you very much. Peace building is a broad process. It's a long-term process. We have a peace building that must precede conflicts, and peace building during conflict and post-conflict peace building processes. NGOs have a lot to do, because when they play the role of mediators and the parties involved in the conflict see them as neutral, they are able to bring people together. You know, after every conflict, there is so much to be done. The systems are disrupted in terms of governance at the local level. Trade is disrupted. Dialogue is disrupted. There's mistrust. So NGOs must bring the different actors together, especially the youth, to conscientize them about the ramifications or the consequences of conflict, so that they will now embrace the peace dimension of the steps to take in resolving the conflict. So NGOs have a lot of work to do in the peace building process. They must involve everybody from the governments, from the civil society, from traditional rulers, from schools. So many other stakeholders must be brought together to bring the country back to its feet and put the right structures in place and make sure that peace and justice prevail.
Yes, thanks so much, Godwin. I'm so sorry, Alberta, the connection, it does happen to everyone. Today was very difficult. I just wanted you to touch on a specific question relating to the rights of women, especially during, you know, your work and the issues of conflict. How does your organization deal with that?
Thank you so much for having me in this program. And I'll begin that, you know, when you see, yeah, you know, when it comes to women's and children's rights, despite the strikes and the international help when it comes to building women's rights movements over the many years, women and girls around the world are still facing challenges, especially when it comes to, like, children. Women are still being trafficked. Children are still being trafficked. There is this sex slavery. And you see that women's rights are not fully given. The women are not fully given the right of recognition. So it's a bit challenging. And, you know, if you are dealing with only the elites, like the educated women, it's a bit better. But we're now focusing on all women. Because currently, we're actually zooming into the Oti region of Ghana, and with our little bit of feasibility study on the retention and transition, smooth transition of the girl child, the girl child education, you will see that they are still lacking behind. Some parents still feel that educating the girl child or letting her go to school is not relevant, because at the end, she will still end up being married to, or still go end up being in the kitchen. So it's a bit challenging, and I'll say that women's rights are not fully, they are not being given the right to actually engage when it comes to peace building. They don't have a voice. So that is one of the challenges we are facing. Yeah.
In marking International Women's Day earlier this year, you know, the call is still for equal rights for women, as I spoke about earlier. Are you getting enough? I mean, are the cries getting to the ears of the international community?
Currently, I would say, well, the international communities are supporting, but we are not actually getting help from the other side, you understand? We are basically within our community. And as I told you earlier, that though the international bodies are also advocating for the emancipation of the women's rights and children's rights, but still on the ground, there's a lot of challenge. You see that women are being helped, they've been emancipated, but their voice is not being heard. You may be in a meeting, then you see that the men, elitism, the men are dominating. When you make any views, they feel like yours is not, it's not substantial enough, or you don't have much to say. So that's what I can say when it comes to that angle.
And Alberta, just on a political front, I know also the call is for more women to be put into ministries, the different ministries. I mean, I think Cameroon, correct me if I'm wrong, has about 63 ministries. And of those, 11 are occupied by women, only 11. What would in your personal capacity, if you know, putting more women in major political roles, what difference that would make to Cameroon?
When you look at our parliament and also the key positions, like the key offices in Ghana, I would say women are being like they are climbing. The number, the percentage that used to be there, let me say 4 years ago, I think now there's been an increase. But what I'm trying to say is that even though the women are there, you know, because the international front, they said women emancipation, empowerment of women. So the women are actually there. They are trying to promote them. They are trying to empower them just to hold an office, that they know that there's a woman here. But their voice being heard, their impact, their contribution being considered is the challenge. That is the challenge that we need to work towards.
Okay, thank you so much, Alberta. I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for elaborating on that. And I do hope that, like with all the other countries on the continent, that women's rights and women's issues can be taken a lot more seriously. Thank you so much for your time, Alberta. You are listening to All Africa Silencing of the Guns podcast series on peacebuilding on the continent. And we are in conversations with experts from the Positive Peace Group and West Africa Center for Peace. Divine, if I can turn to you, can you briefly describe how your role as a gender officer ties into the work of peace building?
Hello, everybody. Thank you so much for having me on your program today. It's a pleasure. My role predominantly is to see into it that, first and foremost, all programs we have gender mainstreaming. And equally, especially with the conflict that we have in Cameroon right now, and the Positive Peace Group is involved in training. And during this training, particularly with young people and women, we make sure that women issues are raised. In Cameroon today, so many women groups exist, vying for peace to return in Cameroon. The Positive Peace Group is actively involved in this fight. And we work with women groups. We have a radio program, Access Point Africa, which is one of the oldest radio programs on community advocacy in Cameroon. Back in 2016, the organization that hinted on what was going to happen in the country, and I remember on Access Point, we had hinted on this. Unfortunately, it went unheard, and we are where we are today.
Thanks so much, Divine. I'm not sure if Alberta is still with us. Are you there, Alberta?
Yes, please.
Fantastic, because the next question is for you as part of the discussion. So, Alberta, you know, how does the West Africa Center for Peace engage with the youth and women when it comes to peace building?
Given that the youth constitutes the active forces and they was youth position an important role when it comes to the rulership of our nations and communities, we cannot afford to take these people out. So as West Africa Center for Peace Studies, what we do is that we normally engage this, we engage the youth because we know that they are vulnerable and perpetrators when it comes to any conflict or violence. So we know that talking to them, hearing their views, knowing what they think about anything that entails or embedded in maybe the three concepts, that is violence, crime, and peace building. We need to know what they feel, because most of them, we know that they are very energetic and strong, and they want to also afford, they want to get money and be able to look after their, maybe to chase after whatever they want to do. So they don't even think when this violence, extremism, or any other group comes to them that we want you to engage in this and do that. They are only looking at the financial aspect. They don't think about the repercussions. They don't look at the consequences. So we build, we get programs that we do train. We train the youth on the essence, to know the essence and the importance of peace. Like I would say, last month, we went to one of the universities, Pentecost University, to talk on the topic on violence, extremism, the role that the youth can play in highlighting or to play in reducing the violence. And because when they speak, their voice is the majority. They are the majority of our community. And when it comes to the women also, we know that women, as they play a central role when it comes to our families. They are caretakers. And if these women, look at our grandmothers, look at the sisters, the aunties, if these women are not taken through to know the importance of peace, they will not inculcate that habit into the people they train. So taking them out of the process will also be a big problem. So the West Africa Center for Peace Studies is also engaging these mothers, engaging the women day in, day out. We went to the churches, went to the communities. We are advocating across the South region. And I remember during the International Peace Day, we went to the market, teaching the women how they can harmonize their family, and as well as touching the financial bit, because we know that most of the women are traders, and if they don't know how to spend their monies well, especially when it comes to funeral in Ghana, in the Ghanaian context, the women spend so much money in just holding clothes down instead of that money being used to support the man. So we touch all angles. So thank you so much. I hope I answered the question.
No, thank you very much, Alberta, for that. Divine, if I can just come back to you, just to add on to what Alberta was saying, from the Positive Peace Group side, what does the group do to empower youth and women?
Thank you so much for the question. I mentioned earlier that the Positive Peace Group is involved in trainings. It's involved in advocacy here, the field advocacy, and even online and radio advocacy. For instance, in 2019, we were one of the organizations that worked in partnership with UNICEF in order to identify internally displaced persons in Yaoundé, and we were to train them on how they can take back their life, take control over their lives again. And a few more, I think it was in August, we equally involved, going into partnership with the Women's Association in Kumba, that is in the Southwest region, during which we were able to put meaning into over 150 young people, including women, who formed 60% of the total population during that time. And again, in July, we started research in order to see how we can understand the degree of the effect that the COVID-19 actually and the phone crisis has had on the women, young secondary school girls who are resident in the capital, Yaoundé. And the objective of this research was to see how we were able to come to their help, particularly the girls, because we noticed that so most of these girls, they are abused within family members, and most of them, they do not have sanitary pads. So we are working to see in a few days how we can be able to, with partners, get sanitary pads for this girl. We know it is not a lasting solution, it's temporary, but that is just the first phase. We'll then see how, while doing this, of course, we join the other women's group, like the Northwest and Southwest women's group, that is not CAOPEM, and many other women's group, in order to call for a peaceful return. And talking about this, 2 months ago, there was the first women convention on peace that held in Yaoundé here. The Positive Peace was one of it. And so far, we notice equally with dismay too that during the first national dialogue that we held, and women were not very representative, and this is where our interest, one of the key interests is, in getting women involved in the negotiation of peace. Because if we do not do that, it's going to be problematic. So generally, we involve in training, whether to sensitize young people, how, especially those running away from war who are resident in rural regions, how they can take back control of their lives. Consider the fact that these young people in the cities, they can fall prey to many ills. And secondly, we join women's group in order to call back for peaceful return and where to see how we can get more women involved in a peace negotiation. And then thirdly, research, because after the conflict, there's going to be, people are going to take back their lives. And we know that during conflict, there's change of power. There are women who have become heads of household. How would the community go back into normalcy? This is where we are interested. We want to know, it's not all about negotiating peace, but after the peace, we want to make sure that some of the inequalities that existed before a conflict, they need to be sorted out, and the new ones that have been created, we need to negotiate them too. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Divine. Thank you for that. Over to you now, Derek. As a political peace officer, just how bad are the ethno-political tensions in Cameroon? And to what degree does it interfere with your peace-building work?
Thank you very much. Actually, the situation in Cameroon is it's neither an ethnic problem nor a purely political problem, but we see the interplay of the politicization of ethnicities as well as ethnicities playing into the politics of the country. It is actually an issue of frustrations with bad governance. That is the problem. Cameroonians, they live together, they work together. The ordinary citizens, they have no problem from all the different ethnicities in the country. The major problem has to do with the politicization of ethnicities and also with bad governance in the country. However, at this particular point, the issues of ethnicity and political divisions in Cameroon, they're very high now. And this is mainly because of the lack of preventive measures to be able to mitigate these issues when they come up. And of course, it explains very seriously in the work of peace building, because you know, you are looked, you're treated by what ethnicity, where you come from, you know. And especially those who are from the English-speaking region in Cameroon, it's very difficult to operate. And there is still a lot of mistrust, you know, and a lack of confidence. And this is playing so much into the work of the Positive Peace Group. And, you know, for some time, the government has been so hard on civil society and NGOs operating in the region. But however, I consider all this to be maybe part of the failure to get a peaceful solution. In fact, we are working very hard on violence prevention. That is where we stand, violence prevention. We know conflict cannot be stopped. We know conflict cannot be prevented, but at least we can prevent them from de-escalating into violence. So that is where we stand. And we know full well that it's a very challenging issue, but we're still working hard. We've been trying to do trainings to train to build capacities on conflict analysis, because without proper analysis, we cannot be able to get good solutions to resolve these issues. As of now, you know, the way things are going in the country, if nothing is done about this ethnicization of politics and politicization of ethnicities, I fear that in the nearest future we might have complications and running back to issues that maybe we the world had already taken a stand that never again will such things take place in Africa. Thank you very much.
Derek, if you can just elaborate, you mentioned something about you working on violence prevention. Is this something specific you're doing apart from the training?
Yeah, the first issue is the notion of violence prevention. It's a new notion that people need to accept. You know, we've been so used to conflict prevention, but that is not working. We're doing a lot of research on issues, trying to resolve the root causes of issues, because we are looking more at the manifestations of these problems. We need to look at the root causes of these problems. What we see physically happening, the physical violence going on, and the ethnic tensions, these are all manifestations of the problem, but we need to get to the roots of the problem. And so we're doing a lot of research. We're also trying to do a lot of advocacy. And our advocacy is mainly on the aspect of peace by peaceful means. We need to adopt a policy of peace through peaceful means, not peace through violence. Because even after all the fighting, we end up on the table. So our focus is on peace by peaceful means. And we are trying to get an attitude change. We are trying to get a policy change that will be able to bring this into practice. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Derek. Erasmus, we just go back to you now. Just to explain to us to what degree the international community plays a role in helping the West Africa Center for Peace's mission towards building peace.
Well, let's look at it from first sub-regional level, regional level, then international level. Directly, we have no support from international community or any of those sub-regional or regional organizations, but their policies and some other form of documents that they release support us in doing our work. And by so doing, if you look at in the 90s, personally, the international community were in places like Liberia, Sierra Leone, and other Cote d'Ivoire and other crisis areas in the sub-region. This means that when they are able to go the hard way, pave way, what ECOMOC has done, then organizations like us have also leeway to be able to engage with the population to be able to bring peace. As I told you, we have a typical MOU with a positive peace group, and we are going to enter into serious engagement with the communities. So we can only draw inference from international community and other organizations to be able to do our work. We are discussing about Cameroon today. Has the international community gone there yet? Well, we can have element of international community over there. The cases is boiling. Are we waiting for the African Union and other institutions to wait for a lot of people to die before they go? These are some of the questions that can come up. They can go when it's hard and support the NGOs, non-governmental organizations, to be able to do their work to support their cause.
So you are all listening to the All Africa Silencing of the Guns podcast series on peacebuilding on the continent. We are in conversation with experts from the Positive Peace Group and West Africa Center for Peace. So let's touch on the issue of human rights. Erasmus, you were picking up that point?
Yes, I was saying that I always tell people that human rights issues are most difficult issues to deal with because no nation or no country, no government like human rights officers. But if they are not there to do the checks and balances, it's not going to be okay. We live in a jungle. So doing human rights work, popping your nose into affairs of the government and other things has always been challenged. Women face a lot of challenges, sideline, where now we want, that's why gender is being on the agenda strongly, to make sure that women also get to the level of men. By entering that, you are stepping on people's toe. So it has always been difficult for wives to do sex work. But because we are mandated to take care of those areas, we make sure that we engage the women and we empower the women to make sure that they will be able to stand on their own and advocate for their concerns. For the children, children's issues are usually concerned to everyone. So it becomes a concern. So we always try to work alongside with government institutions such as social welfare and others to make sure that children's rights are being respected.
Godwin, if I can just go to you now, can you elaborate on what the West African Center for Peace's Gender, Human Rights and Migration Program does in Cameroon?
You know, when we talk of migration, it is mostly citizens leaving their country of origin to go to another country for greener pastures.
Yeah.
And mostly the pasture is not always green on the other side, but that's the perception. And West Africa Center for Peace Studies is encouraging the youth to find alternative ways of having livelihood in order not to always take their skills or talent to other places. And the migration side, what we are looking at is connecting with people from different backgrounds and making sure that they bring their skills or competencies that they've acquired over the time, over the years, to help their country. In the case of Cameroon, we know that when there's conflicts, people, there's brain flights, people are brain drain. Okay, but we can rather get brain gain, that is Cameroonians in the diaspora, in other parts of Africa or in the world, should be encouraged to come back and contribute. The conflict or whatever is going on in Cameroon can be resolved by Cameroonians if they see in the greater interest of the country as paramount. So with this partnership we have with PPG, we are trying to mobilize the youth to view peace as very important and bring their ideas together for the betterment of their country. And we are calling on, through this discussion, that all the parties involved must see the future of Cameroon as belonging to the youth. And then Cameroon has a lot of talent. We know of a lot of Cameroonians who are great people. We have a great musician, we have a great footballer, we have people in diverse backgrounds who are Cameroon, medical doctors and all that. So we are now mobilizing all these people that they should come on board, put who belongs to the Anglophone side, who belongs to the Francophone side aside, and then view Cameroon as one country, and that they must all work together so that there will be peace. Because without peace, there will always be people going to other countries, and it will be affecting the development, the pace of development in Cameroon.
Thanks so much, Godwin. This question is for both Derek and Divine, actually, on the Positive Peace Group side. You know, human rights protection is integral in building sustainable peace. What is the group's approach on dealing with the violation of human rights in a conflict-ridden country like Cameroon?
Let me begin. Thank you very much. Yes, this is Derek. I'm beginning. Divine will then follow after.
Yes.
We are all aware that the peace is not simply the absence of war or of overt violence, but we know that peace has to do also with the existence of structured and structural justice in the community. All this cannot take place without the respect for human rights. of course, in a country like Cameroon, we understand that the warring parties, the parties in conflict, they operate with impunity, little or no respect for human rights and international humanitarian law, especially relating to armed conflict. The approach of the Positive Peace Group, firstly, is through grassroots lobbying. We're trying to focus on getting communities to know their rights first and then to identify the violations of human rights and also to speak out. People need to name and shame what is not good, what is violation. And of course, when we're able to do this, we bring to the attention of the perpetrators to understand the implications of their actions. We're also trying to do advocacy on accountability. Of course, impunity triumphs on the lack of accountability. When people are not held accountable for the crimes they commit, especially the human rights related crimes, you know, it's a vicious cycle. It only leads to an increase in this crime. So we're trying to advocate for accountability. All those who commit human rights abuses, they need to be brought to book. And no matter how long that takes, we continue advocating. And of course, we also trying to see how much we can strengthen the capacities of the civilians to carry out protection of civilians. We hope that if people are able to understand what their rights are, if people are able to speak out very clearly about these issues, if those who perpetrate this, they are able to understand the implications of their actions and brought to accountability, we obviously are making a contribution in our own little way towards resolving this issue. And also, I think lastly, one of the areas that we are trying to capitalize on is the issue of naming and shaming, especially using the social media. We need to say these things. When they are not good, we say they are not good. And when they are good, we say they are good. So I think this, in some way is also contributing towards ameliorating the situation on ground. Divine.
Okay, thank you so much. So just in addition to what Derek has said, you know, in a conflict situation, it's very difficult for institutions to function properly. I remember there are some divisions in the Northwest where right now their mayors are based in the center. That is the capital of the Northwest. They no longer function in their various divisions the way they're supposed to function. Actually, services have been moved to the main cities. Now, in a situation like this, what happened to those local communities where they no longer have a central power? Now, one of the things that we are doing, added to what Derek has said, is documenting. We document the event as it goes, because if you have to bring people to justice, you should be able to provide evidence or that pertains to what we are accusing them of. So even if 20 years later, you need concrete evidence in order to prove your case. So one of the things we are doing is documentation of events. A second, in addition, again, we do advocacy. And talk about advocacy here. 2 years ago, I was one of those few people in the network representing Positive Peace Group in United Network of Young Peace Builders. We sent envoys to Addis Ababa, that is the AU, in order to bring the case of Cameroon there. And we were so surprised that when we got there, we realized that Cameroon has no file there. So it becomes very, very tricky to talk about issues like this, but to have taken the issue there, I think that's a step ahead. So we are so proud of that. Equally, we call for restraint of both parties. We know it's difficult for civil society organizations to directly intervene, but the least we can do is to call for restraint, especially considering what Derek was talking about, violence prevention. And then we equally encourage talks and third-party intervention. That's what we've been seeing about dialogue. So we would not cease talking about it until something is done.
Thanks, Divine. Thank you so much for that. You've been listening to the All Africa Silencing of the Gun series on peacebuilding on the continent. And we were in conversation with experts from the Positive Peace Group and West Africa Center for Peace. Thank you again to all our experts for taking the time to elaborate on issues in Cameroon and what is being done through peace building. Thank you so much. And All Africa is, of course, grateful to the Carnegie Corporation of New York for supporting our reporting on peace building in Africa. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much, All Africa, and the efforts are very highly appreciated.
Absolutely. Thank you, everybody.